Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, our listeners were probably a little bit surprised yesterday when we gave John Kerry the good martini. But hey, every once in a while, a blind squirrel finds a nut, and we got to give the guy some credit when he's more bold on a policy than President Obama. We'll get to President Obama in the first two martinis today, and trust me, we have reverted back to form here. West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, he, of course, the guy who salvaged his Senate campaign by literally shooting the cap and trade bill, has realized that he's also up for re-election again in 2012, because right now he's just finishing Robert Byrd's unexpired term. Manchin going to the floor of the U.S. Senate yesterday and ripping both parties for saying that they're pushing spending cut bills that are non-realistic. He ripped the Republicans for going too far, ripped the Democrats for not going far enough, and reserved these special words for the president himself.
Why are we doing all this when the most powerful person in these negotiations, our president, has failed to lead this debate or offer a serious proposal for spending and cuts that he would be willing to fight for? How does that make sense?
Now, it's a little bit disconcerting that Manchin doesn't really see himself lining up behind many Republican proposals, but it's got to be a little bit nerve-wracking for Obama and Harry Reid that yet another guy here is not at all on the same page as they are.
Yeah, there are a couple of points worth noting in here. The first is the Republican cuts that are so draconian and over the top. Greg, if my math is correct, they're basically proposing in cuts the equivalent of one-fifth of our deficit for February.
Right.
Never mind the year. I mean, you know, February somehow in a short month. It's not even a leap year. We don't even have that 29th day. Somehow the U.S. federal government managed to run the biggest single month deficit ever. And all of this cuts that we're talking about are about 18, 19, 20% of that.
Right.
So the idea that the Republicans are being wild-eyed, draconian, you know, cutting, slashing, and burning really doesn't hold water. And it's kind of depressing to see Manchin trying to, you know, make that argument. But what makes this a good martini is it seems like every issue that comes down the pike, Republicans will say one thing and Democrats will say another. And very often it'll be Obama saying, "This is my bold leadership plan to appoint a commission," and then to ignore the you know, recommendations of the commission. Or, "This is my bold plan to freeze spending." Well, it doesn't really, you know, and each one of these things seem to be not enough. And the Republicans say, no, you got to go way too further. And then when the Republicans put forth their idea, the argument from the Democrats and the New York Times, and yes, I repeat myself, is to say, this is unbelievably, you know, this will be back to Dickens days. You know, it'll be unbelievable poverty in the streets. When a Manchin comes along and says, "Okay, guys, not even I can go with that. I can't sell this in West Virginia. I cannot go back there and pretend that Obama is handling this responsibly." To me, I think it's a useful indicator. And it might, you know, I understand that Claire McCaskill has made kind of sort of vague similar comments in this vein. So the fact that red state Democrats are recognizing that Obama's concept of budget cuts really don't fit what the public sees as necessary is good news for us. Whether this really means Republicans are going to win these budget fights, it's still a long way off. But I want to see as many defections and as much nervousness on their side as possible. And I think Manchin's a good leading indicator of that.
It appears that the Senate Democrats are now the junior partner here. You see the House Republicans really leading the way on this. Harry Reid is hardly seen in public anymore. And the Republicans, when they were deep in the minority in the last Congress, were the party of no. But all you hear now from Senate Democrats and from the White House, since they're not leading, as Senator Manchin just pointed out, is no. So the roles are clearly reversed, but at this time, apparently, saying no is the virtuous thing to do. So anyway, on to martini number two now. And President Obama ran for president, of course, in 2008. Around that time, and even many years before that, folks like Amnesty International and the International Red Cross were condemning George W. Bush for the savage conditions that Guantanamo Bay detainees were suffering, and just the fact that they were being held indefinitely, and some of these people would never face trial in American civilian courts. And President Obama had this to say during the midst of that campaign.
"By any measure, our system of trying detainees has been a failure. Meanwhile, this legal black hole has substantially set back America's ability to lead the world against the threat of terrorism and undermined our most basic values. So make no mistake, we are less safe because of the way George Bush has handled this issue."
And, of course, one of the first things he did was sign an executive order planning the shutdown of Gitmo. It only took him 2 years to get a clue here, Jim. And apparently Dick Cheney was right when he said a few months ago the Obama administration has done a few things right, basically those things when they realized we were right back in the Bush administration. So, but for whatever reason, the president deciding to flip-flop here in a good way. But, of course, he's going to couch it that he really hasn't flip-flopped here.
Yeah, I mean, we were discussing this, Greg. The reason I wanted to say this is the bad martini is – well, first, the old joke, you know, where do all defenders of Gitmo go to get their reputations back? You know, now that the Democratic president has looked at all the circumstances and deemed no other option really palatable or serious or worthwhile, you know, will anyone take back any of their criticism? Will any of them come out and say, you know what? Oh, Bush and Rumsfeld and all of the Cheney and all of these folks actually knew what they were doing. They really had looked at all the options and concluded this was the best way to keep Americans safe. No, we're not going to hear any of that. And it's kind of frustrating. I'd love to believe that this decision will cost Obama one vote in 2012, but I have my doubts. If anyone can find someone who says that Gitmo was important enough to them that if Obama didn't shut it down, didn't keep his promise, by golly, I'll not vote for him, and they'll vote for the Republican or stay home or vote green or do whatever. And this kind of, to me, illustrates just how much of what is said – how much of what was said, in particular by Obama on the campaign trail in 2007 and 2008, was really just kind of fluff. It was just, you know, a window dressing. It was just stuff that sounded good. Just words, we might say, in a particularly ironic description, because no one really cares that he's not keeping his promises. I used to do the seemingly endless all statements from Barack Obama come with an expiration date, all of them mantra. And after a while, I gave it up, Greg, because I didn't see any Democrats really arguing that he did a good job of keeping his promises. Two, I was going to need a staff of like 30 people to keep track of all of them because they kept coming so fast and furiously. And three, it just kind of reaffirmed everyone's kind of suspicion that 90% of what is said on the campaign trail doesn't really matter. That as soon as they get into office, everything changes. And that might make some people cynical. But to me, I think it just kind of observes that – that they're just there to be applause lines. They're not actually meant to be policy recommendations. They're just there to sound good. And, you know, this kind of, you know, begins to undermine your faith in democracy. And so instead, I just look at other silly things that Democrats do. Well, we'll have cheery martinis. Like, I don't know, are Democrats doing anything else bizarre and strange, Greg?
They are.
To give you a segue.
They absolutely are. I just want to say in closing on that martini, that's a good thing the president held open hearings on health care, didn't hire any lobbyists, and made all his dealings with lobbyists on the public record. So at least he's clearly honored those. Anyway, on to number three now, and the ongoing saga, the ongoing political drama in Wisconsin. The latest thing was that it looked like the AWOL 14 state Senate Democrats in Wisconsin were going to come back, maybe not. The state Senate Democratic leader sent a letter to Republican Governor Scott Walker suggesting a border summit. Now, I've eaten at the Wendy's that's over the interstate on the Wisconsin-Illinois border. I don't think that's necessarily the best place to hold a summit like this, and neither does Governor Walker.
We need to walk through why this letter is so ridiculous. And I think it's important because for the last several weeks, both Senator Fitzgerald and my administration have been reaching out to reasonable senators, many of whom are very interested and willing to come back to the state of Wisconsin. And time again, the person standing in the way of making that possible is Senator Mark Miller.
Now, I'm going to give Walker credit for being very gracious to those who would apparently like to come back but can't because of Miller. Unless he's holding them hostage, Jim, at gunpoint and making them tape video statements, why can't they come back?
You know, as you're describing it, the Wendy's that's there, from the tone of the offer letter, Greg, I really was picturing something more like the DMZ between North Korea and South Korea. I figured they had checkpoints and guards and it'd be, you know, kind of like that special negotiating table they have right on the border there between the Koreas, where one side comes in from one side and maybe another side. I probably shouldn't spend too much time discussing this idea, Greg, because I'm sure at some point this will turn into a stimulus project. Someone will actually say that they need this at every state border to deal with so many fleeing lawmakers that they need these sorts of things. It's interesting because the polling has not been fantastic for Walker. And
right.
In fact, generally the public doesn't seem to see much of a problem with public sector unions having collective bargaining. On the other hand, I just have a really hard time believing that Americans would look at running away from the job and hiding as a legitimate tool for influencing the political process. And by the way, I don't know about you, Greg. Is there any evidence that Walker is at least tracing the return address? you know, where the mail, where's it postmarked? It'll give us a clue as to where they are. They track them down and unleash the hounds. The fact that we're in these bizarre circumstances in which, you know, runaway people are offering to negotiate, but only on their terms, and surreptitiously in the dark of night, snicking, you know, surprised that the message didn't come by carrier pigeon or something like that. Like, this is, there's some ways this is very funny, but on the other hand, it kind of shows the dysfunction of the kind of toddlers who've gotten elected to state government, who really believe that if they throw a big enough tantrum, they'll get what they want. And guys, welcome to politics. Sometimes you lose. You lost in November and you don't have the votes now, so you got to come back and take it like a man. But, you know, no matter how many times this is said to them, they seem to think that they can hold out indefinitely. What this does to Wisconsin, I have no idea, and I remains to be seen, but I have a suspicion it's not good for the state.
If I had one suggestion to give to Governor Walker, Jim, I think it would be this, that he should have let them know that the resolution to honor the Green Bay Packers for winning the Super Bowl, anyone not present to vote on that would be logged as a no, and therefore their future in politics would absolutely be destroyed in Wisconsin.
There you go. There you go. Or you know, maybe you have the, I understand that apparently some Packers are sticking with the Democrats on this, but have the day that, you know, Aaron Rodgers stops by the state capitol and they say, well, do you want to miss Aaron Rodgers, or are you willing to come back and vote for this? So.
Exactly right. Well, we'll see if that tactic is necessary, if this drama still goes on. Jim, we'll talk again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the next Three Martini Lunch.